SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Right here on a Monday morning. Kevin Walls, nice little time break there out in L.A. It was fantastic. DRS here as always, quite literally as always. I don't think Donnie's missed this show since he started on this show. Thanks for holding it down. How you feeling, my man?
I was ready. I was ready to open this show up like never before, but it's nice to get back into that co-pilot seat here, relax, and maybe not do too much work today. We'll see.
I think for old time's sakes, a couple of times, Donnie's going to just trail off and not hear any kind of question that I'm asking him.
That's fantastic.
True. That is fantastic. Yeah. Here's what was also fantastic. A even series through two games in the NBA Finals, though, as we are used to, a blowout was in hand. 107-88, Golden State wins Game 2, an easy cover as they had a huge third quarter, winning it 35-14. Their biggest lead in this game was 29, which is the exact amount of points scored by Steph Curry, who was off, Donnie, to a fantastic finals here. But they are evened up right now with Boston.
Yeah, monster fourth quarter by the Boston Celtics in Game 1, monster third quarter by the Golden State Warriors in Game 2. Quite frankly, I snuck out with one yesterday. First quarter there, Kevin, 31-30 final. I had the Golden State Warriors minus a half of a point. Unbelievable finish by Steph Curry at the end of the break there. But we thought we were headed for one of those classics down the stretch, only a two-point game at the break, but not for sure here. But as you saw, the Golden State Warriors absolutely pepper the Boston Celtics. But this is what we wanted. Yeah. 1-1 heading back to Boston, a long series. Give us what we want, just maybe not in blowout fashion technically in both games here.
I will see. Yeah, I do think, you know, kind of labeling Game 1 as a blowout is a bit unfair. Yeah. That was awesome, that crazy comeback by Boston there. I mentioned how good Steph Curry has been in this finals, and I thought this was a good point to bring up here. He's current favorite for finals MVP, and you would think, hey, listen, that makes sense. They're currently favored to win the series slightly. Steph right now, Donnie, is a bigger favorite, even if it's slight, to win finals MVP than the Warriors are to win the title, offering up a little bit of a suggestion that he might be able to win this in a losing effort, perhaps?
Yeah, I don't know, but I guess it's one of those things where the different betting markets and where you're taking those angles at, because quite frankly, you saw through the first two games, looks like Steph's going to be on it for this series here, dropping, you know, 30-plus points and being absolutely the star. So if you figure that the Golden State Warriors are going to win, it's almost like, well, wait, the safer bet might actually be Steph Curry, if that makes sense, because quite frankly, you might see 35-35-35, seven-game series where the Boston Celtics win, and Tatum doesn't play all that well, leaves that door open. But right now, if you're just looking at the series itself, if the Golden State Warriors do win, Steph Curry is going to be the MVP.
Yeah, that I definitely think we've seen established through two games. But to me, I thought it was worth mentioning, even if it's slight, let me tell you this, though. There's a 0% chance Steph's walking away with this thing in a losing effort. We're not, I cannot envision a world where we go seven and Steph averages 32 a night and that somehow gets him a finals MVP in a losing effort. And listen, what a bizarre way that would be for Steph to finally get his finals MVP. Obviously, one of the big overarching themes of these finals. We'll get into all of that, though. We have plenty of time. Also, though, a big NBA headline that we will dive into are some changes coming in Utah. One definitive, one now, perhaps a domino effect. Quinn Snyder out in Utah. Ultimately, the contract ran out, and Quinn Snyder wants to go elsewhere instead of staying with the Jazz organization. This has left their star, Donovan Mitchell, a little uncertain about his future in Utah. As the radio audience joins us here on a Monday morning, Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside. Donnie, it looks like, as we expected, a very big offseason for the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, and some things had to change in Utah, right? That's what we were saying all along when you were trying to match up and say, okay, what needs to change in the offseason? Maybe it's the players, maybe it's the coach. Same thing with the Philadelphia Phillies. You can't fire all the players, so maybe you move the manager or the coach of the team. So I didn't see this was one of those outliers by saying, oh, I didn't see this coming. Something was going to change in Utah, and it had to. The only interesting thing was we saw that maybe Snyder was one of those front guys to be in L.A. and take over the controls of the Los Angeles Lakers, maybe just a few days too late at this point. But he's going to be a hot free agent out there. If somebody wants to make a coaching change, there's a legitimate coach out there waiting.
Yeah, definitely. So that'll be a big one to follow. The former Blazers head coach, Terry Stotts, linked to that Utah job. Again, we'll have plenty of time to get into that. The Stanley Cup playoffs continuing. Right now, you've got the Avs up 3-0, game four tonight. And then yesterday, you saw the Lightning grab their first game of this series, coming back from down 2-0 in that second period, which was huge. So far, Donnie, home ice has been protected.
No, it certainly has, and I thought the Rangers yesterday going up 2-0, say maybe it's just the Rangers year where everything is working in their favor, but a quick comeback there, erasing a 3-goal deficit for the Lightning, shows that's that championship heart. They're not going to go down easily here, Kevin.
Yeah, no doubt about it. How about a pair of Yankees headlines here? One, Joey Gallo comes back, which means Miguel Andujar was sent down, which has led to Miguel Andujar requesting a trade. I feel like this is a rare headline in Major League Baseball where a player says, enough's enough. Get me out of here. I want opportunity. But it's not all bad news for the Yanks, Donnie. A 6-game win streak spearheaded by the current AL MVP favorite, Aaron Judge.
Yeah, Ohtani and Trout dropping back wide like a dozen games in a row that you lose. Certainly, that's going to be a factor. And that's what we talked about in the MVP race at the end of the season. Most of the times, best player on the best team is going to get the nod. Looks like the Yanks and Judge are in that command seat now.
You talk about the Angels and their losing streak. They're swept by the Philadelphia Phillies, who over their last four games, which is a win streak, averaging 8 runs. And how about the Atlanta Braves? 5-game win streak, averaging over 7 runs per game during that, putting some pressure on the Mets with a big series against the Dodgers, which they want so much to get into. It is the early line on a Monday morning. We'll be right back after this quick break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
To the Golden State Warriors and the Boston Celtics. This game was, as Donnie mentioned off the top, really close. A 1-point lead for Golden State after one, a 2-point lead for Golden State after two, and then a 20-plus point lead for Golden State after three. They won the third quarter 35-14. This is now 2-for-2 for the Warriors in terms of avalanching this Boston Celtics group with a huge third quarter. Obviously, I was out last week, didn't have the opportunity to talk about game number one in Boston's big comeback. And a part of me said, man, am I basically going to get the chance to just run it back on a Monday morning, another big comeback? But this was Golden State's game. For me, Donnie, and I know that you guys obviously broke it down last week, but Golden State's season was on the line here. No other way to put it. They go down 0-2 going to Boston. They might as well not go to Boston. This series is done, finished, wrapped up, right then and there, but we are 1-1. I view it as Boston did their job. Some might say maybe Golden State has the momentum, a 19-point victory when it's all said and done. What was your big takeaway from game two?
Yeah, I went into it in game two with the same feelings and saying, okay, I'm the Golden State Warriors here. We got to throw away that fourth quarter and come out strong. So I did take the Golden State Warriors at minus a half in the first quarter. I'm watching it. Celtics had a lead just about the entire way through the first quarter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wasn't that back and forth 1-1-1. It was the Celtics by 2, the Celtics by 5, the Celtics by 6. And then you had that late cover there by Steph Curry. And then even though at the half I said, that's actually a big, massive win for the Boston Celtics, even though the Celtics were shooting the lights out, knocking down three-point shots. They just were turning the basketball over too many times. And if you are a Celtics fan watching that game yourself, going, oh, this is nice. We rode the storm right there. Down one at the end of the first quarter, as you said, down two at the break. Let's have a strong third quarter, and then maybe we can put the pressure back on the Golden State Warriors where they tighten up like they did in game one in the fourth quarter, but that wasn't the case here. Put it on cruise control, 35-14 third quarter, and that game was a runaway from there. everybody gets sent to the bench here. But kudos to Steph Curry dropping some key three-point shots and also a pool party, Kevin, as we like to say, with some late threes in that third quarter to seal that game from Jordan Poole. It was a runaway, but this is what you kind of expected. If you're betting the Warriors, still getting a lot of respect because we talked about it last week, Kevin, while you weren't here, saying, look at this line for Sunday. Boy, they're giving the Celtics a lot of respect again because everybody's loading up on the Golden State Warriors, but this line really isn't moving. And quite frankly, the Golden State Warriors said, yeah, the line should have been moving here. We were the better team with a 19-point victory.
The thing is, right, I think there's a lot of people on Golden State game one, right? Rest advantage, at home, set the tempo, yeah. Golden State into that, right? Boston goes game seven, right? So Boston snagging game one, I would imagine there were a lot of batters who said, well, that's not going to happen again. If Boston would have went up 2-0, I think there were a lot of people who would have stopped betting the finals right then and there. You know, they would have washed their hands clean. I'm not doing this. I don't know what's going on. So Golden State being able to come back here was obviously massive. Their 19-point victory, again, it looked big. What we've seen throughout this postseason, I don't think you go crazy over the notion of, one, not even momentum, but, oh, look, they blew them out. They're clearly the better ball team. Boston's been getting blown out all playoffs. It just doesn't matter. Golden State's blown plenty of teams out, and it's not amounted really to anything. What's the big thing for the Boston Celtics? They have not lost consecutive games during this postseason, right? So if you're Boston taking the first game, that's all you kind of needed to do if you're going to be able to keep that trend true and stay steady and keep this thing pushing forward here. But in terms of what went right for the Golden State Warriors, listen, they had key guys step up. Jordan Poole hits five threes off of the bench. That's big, right? Kevon Looney goes, you know, is plus 24, finishes everything around the basket. That's big. But it is Steph Curry. Steph has been excellent to start these NBA finals, and that's paramount for this basketball team. They rely on Steph. Listen, so this is going to be, what, the fifth or sixth finals that this group's been to here? This is the most they have ever relied on Steph Curry. Obviously not when it was KD leading the ship and winning finals MVPs. And even back when they were, you know, when they won a title and Iguodala wins finals MVP, or they lost to LeBron, right, all those different things. This is a team that needs Steph to be great, and through two games, he's been great. And just to give you a bit of an idea, how about, Don, we talked about it before the series got underway. Steph to lead the series and made threes was plus 115. Two games deep, he's minus 850. Just on another level when we talk about making threes, but not just that. How about leading scorer in this NBA Finals, minus 500. He has set the tone for this basketball team, comfortably been the best player on the floor, and Golden State needs that.
Yeah, and this is what we wanted out of for Golden State, right? You need your superstar players to step up in the biggest moments. And as I say, superstar players, Steph Curry's done that. Klay Thompson has not done that. So it's nice that even though you're looking at Golden State Warriors in a 1-1 series going back to Boston where they have home court advantage, you still feel comfortable because anytime you have your elite guy going nuts from the three-point line, 5 of 12 from three-point range, if this is the Steph Curry that we're getting, because entering into the season, we saw that early Steph Curry, man, 5, 6, 7 three-pointers every single night. Then he hit that lull for it seemed like 2.5 months where, boy, this isn't the same Steph Curry that we're used to, Kevin, where every night it doesn't matter if you guard him, where you guard him, he's knocking down three-point shots from the logo, and it seems like that Steph Curry is back in our lives, and good thing for the Golden State Warriors, because if you are going to have Klay Thompson, who seemed like played himself right back into shape heading into the playoffs, disappearing too many times, but if you're getting that effort out of Steph Curry, and we talk about it in different sports, Kevin, right, if you have in the NFL an elite deep threat here, it opens up the court, or excuse me, opens up the field for everybody else. In the NBA, when you have a shooter that you have to extend out on and double team 5 to 10 feet behind the three-point line, everybody else gets open looks here. So as long as Steph Curry is shooting A at volume and B, making a decent amount of those three-point shots, the offense is going to look good for the Golden State Warriors. If we flip it over there to the Boston Celtics ends, it's so wild how you can go game to game here. Like Al Horford in game one, you couldn't stop the guy from even thinking about Kevin going, is he has a chance to be the MVP in this series? Yeah, how about this MVP performance? 2 points in game two. My goodness.
Listen, those are... Remember when Al Horford basically won the series against the Milwaukee Bucks? Like, just an outrageous thing that should probably have never happened. Then he rocks up 6 made threes, 26 points in game number one, obviously was otherworldly here. And listen, when you get three made field goals on 11 attempts for a whopping 6 points from Al, Marcus Smart, and Robert Williams, that's going to be a tough mountain to climb. But I have to imagine Ime Udoka sat. Remember, we were doing the whole can Jalen and Jason play together thing. And listen, they're in the finals. They can play together. But can they play well together at the same time? Like, Donnie, we are deep into the playoffs for this basketball team. They have only both scored 25-plus. I believe it's twice in the same game during this postseason. And they are 20 games into this playoffs. I mean, can we – you got to imagine, Ime, can you both just figure it out? I mean, Jason Tatum with whatever that was in game one, the customary Jason Tatum is terrible game. They win that game, which is obviously incredible. But we've seen this from Jaylen Brown. Like, Don, he gave you 5 of 17. Were you surprised? I wasn't. Of course Jaylen Brown offers up a stinker after, even if it wasn't wildly efficient, a pretty effective game number one.
Yeah, it still was, too. But also, you take a look at there, if you're looking at Jason Tatum, and say, hold on now. Minus 36 this game. He had 28 points. And also, how about game one? You talk about some of these adjustments made maybe by Steve Kerr. 13 assists for Jason Tatum in game one. 3 assists in game two here. It's just wild, some of these ebbs and flows and swings that really keep you on your toes. But the one guy that if you continuously back right now, giving you honest efforts at those 8.5-point totals, that's White coming off the bench here for the Boston Celtics. He continues to say, you know what? Let me in. He's like Jordan Poole. I think I should be a starter right now. Come on.
It's everyone has their guys. I watch Derek White and I think about Donnie. That's Donnie's guy right there out there getting after. Let me mention this quick note here on Jason Tatum. Worst plus minus in the play-by-play era, which goes back to 95-96. That's 25 years of work there for Jason Tatum. But the next closest was minus 15. What sport was this guy playing that he was minus 21 worse than the next closest teammate? A lot more NBA Finals here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back with you here on the Early Line. It's DRS and I catch up about my spaggy activities over on the West Coast there. AEW Dynamite related. Caught a Dodger game, which was nice. I did not make the trip to the Bay, though I maybe could. I found out the flight wouldn't have been too bad, all things considered. It would have been about a 6-hour drive, which wouldn't have been worth it all in all. Though game one was exciting. Game number two, though, Donnie, was very, very close to having a different headline here. Now, maybe the Warriors would have won, but the headline would have been Draymond Green ejected in game two. I've talked about this plenty of times. Draymond Green gets a technical foul and then proceeds to do whatever he wants because the refs say, fine, we won't throw him out. Nobody wants Draymond thrown out. It's a little much, isn't it? The thing is, it was on full display in game number two. He fouls Jaylen Brown on a 3 with under a minute to go in the first half. Draymond then, Donnie, you tell me if I'm making any bit of this up, rests his foot on Jaylen Brown's head. Jaylen Brown, like any normal person in the world, pushes his foot off of his head, to which Draymond takes offense to. A shoving match ensues, and they go to the monitor to review if there were any technical fouls that needed to be assessed. At which point, anybody who's ever watched the NBA ever goes, classic double tech, we'll move on. Ah, but Draymond had already picked up a technical foul, Donnie. So what do you know? They go to the monitor. Nah, nothing here. There were no extracurriculars. Maybe the monitor feed cut out. I'll ask you, Donnie, should Draymond Green have been ejected in game two?
Yeah, it probably should have been. And from a competitive standpoint, you hope that wouldn't be the case, but some guys are always in the crosshairs. This isn't one guy said, man, Kevin, he's only had one technical the entire season. This is really out of sorts for him. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. But also, the thing I like so much about the double technical and the ejection is what? He already got one tech. So they go to their monitors, and you know all three referees are going like, hey, by the way, Draymond's got one tech. He has to really, I don't know, give him a two-piece to the jaw, and then we'll maybe throw him out. But anything short of that, he's not going to be tossed out of this game. But any other situation, if you had anybody in the, I don't even care if it was Steph Curry that did that. They're both getting technicals. But the fact that it was Draymond Green and, oh, do we want to throw Draymond out? Because he's going to go crazy on his podcast over the next 3 days. And then the next time the game starts up in Boston, he's just going to be hell on wheels for the entire first half, letting us know that he shouldn't have got that second technical. Let's just not give him one. And then all of a sudden, you see the rest of the second quarter, which was quick, the third quarter here. You know what? He does the same stuff the entire game. He's arguing with refs, arguing with players, arguing with coaches, but under the guise of, no way you're going to give me a second technical foul. I'm just going to run wild out here and show you that you'll never call this second tech, and I'm going to push so many boundaries out here. That's what Draymond Green does.
At the end of the day, he obviously should have been ejected. There's no other way to sugarcoat this here. They bring Steve Javy on the broadcast. Hey, Steve, what do you think here? Well, Draymond already has a tech, so I wouldn't throw him out of the game. When did that become the rules? I don't like those aren't the rules, but they are to Draymond Green more than anybody else. And the thing is, like, yeah, but don't you want them to give him a little leeway? Do you really want Draymond to be ejected? Well, one, they already give him leeway. They already do. He gets to do whatever he wants for the most of the game. But two, yes, I want him ejected. I want him ejected. If it was Steph, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Klay Thompson, Jordan Poole, Kevon, I don't care. I want Draymond Green ejected. He deserves to be ejected. Do you know how insane this is from Draymond Green? Donnie, he believes, Draymond, in his heart, the reason the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead is because he missed game 5 because he was suspended. What some people seemingly forgot is he was not suspended for hitting LeBron in the groin. He was suspended for accumulating too many technical and flagrant foul points over the course of the postseason. It resets in the playoffs. That's how many technical and flagrant fouls Draymond was picking up. So he believes, Donnie, in his heart, that his ability to constantly get techs and flagrants cost him a championship, and he still won't stop. And he still won't stop. He does whatever he wants. Like, people always talk about cleaning up the game. It's ridiculous. Jaylen Brown should go out there, start the game by drop kicking Steph, and then on the next possession, drop kick Klay. What do you want? I already got a tech. Can't we let bygones be bygones? It's ridiculous.
And even to the next level there, right? It's you get those accumulation of technical fouls, and he knows that once he comes up against that baseline, where even if he gets a tech, the officers are probably going to be like, well, unless he played kickball with another NBA player, he's probably going to get that technical foul rescinded. It's amazing how you can have these different rules in the regular season, then get to the postseason. But we all know it's like the fifth foul on, let's just say, you know, Giannis picks up his fifth, Jason Tatum, whoever, one of the superstars. Mm-hmm. That sixth foul, you're going to see Giannis go to the basket and just collide with every single player on all five players on the court. And the NBA like, yeah, you know what? That looks like the guy was moving his feet there. Well, how about the elbow by Giannis to his jaw? Well, that guy got his face in the way of Giannis here. We can't give him that sixth foul. Definitely going to be a blocking call at this point. It's just the NBA does work. But also, you're talking about Draymond Green, who's used to this, right, Kevin? So if you take a step back and you say, okay, what happens if it's Kevon Looney? You say, well, he's really not in this mode that much. We're not going to do this. Draymond does this every single game, which you're right. It's like, all right, let me get my first tech out of the way in the first quarter, and then you won't give me that second technical foul. So I can even – most people are like, oh, I got to be on my best behavior. Draymond goes the opposite direction. You already gave me the tech. You're not going to give me a second one to throw me out of an NBA Finals game. Watch what I do next.
It's like if you robbed a bank and then blamed the people that called the cops for ruining your life. Came back out of jail, robbed another bank, and like, I can't believe they keep calling the cops. Like, but they don't call the cops. They don't. They just let him do whatever he wants. Like, it's great. We wouldn't be spending this amount of time as well, Don, if it was Kevon Looney, right? Because, well, one, he would have been ejected, Kevon Looney, right? One. But two, would have been like, maybe not. Like, maybe I might have a different tone if it was Kevon Looney because he doesn't do this all the time. It's incredible to watch. It really is. I tell you, him and Grant Williams, Donnie, what's the juice on Draymond getting a tech in game three? Or him getting at least one tech between game three and four, minus 500, is the biggest guarantee. He's going to get a technical in Boston. Guaranteed, yes. No?
Yes. He'll probably get the tech going back and forth with the fans at the TD Garden here, not even with the players at this point here. So I expect it. And also, is it retribution to say the NBA is like, hey, well, we might have missed that one, but we're going to make sure he doesn't get out of hand in this game. Boop, T in the second quarter.
Like, well, what kind of odds can I get on him being ejected in one of the two games in Boston, right? Like, it's just like that's how simple this seems. Let me sneak in one other headline here. There's so many different things with the NBA Finals. Obviously, off day tomorrow, so we'll have plenty of time to reset. So many things here, Don. One of the overarching themes, though, are the early struggles of Klay Thompson. Two games in, 13 points, which is maybe not the big story, but here's the big story. 32% from the field. He's made 10 shots on 33 attempts, 32% from the floor. He is right now 28% from three, having made only four of his first 15 attempts. Defensively, he's not the same guy. He doesn't rebound the basketball at a high level. He doesn't pass the basketball at a high level. Here's my big takeaway. Tell me if you disagree. People say, are the Warriors in trouble with this? Well, if the Warriors think they need a version of Klay Thompson that's a top 25 player in the NBA, then yes, they're in trouble because Klay will never be that ever again in his career. But I don't think they need that. I think they just need the Klay Thompson that shows up 1.5 times a series, and that's really all it takes here. The reason I don't think they need to be worried about Klay is they are never getting 23 consistent from Klay on efficient shooting. That guy just doesn't exist, Donnie.
Yeah, and he can light it up. We've seen that before in the playoffs, even in closeout situations, knocking down 8 3-point shots. But the question is, are they going to miss Klay? Do they need him to heat up? Well, not necessarily, Kevin. If you're going to get Jordan Poole going 5 from 9 from 3-point range off the bench to cover up that offense out of Klay Thompson, that's okay. But here's what you can't see. A 4 from 19 here from Klay Thompson from the field, and then back it up with Jordan Poole going 1 of 7 from 3-point range. That's going to be a doomsday scenario. What you want is everybody obviously hitting on all cylinders, but you can sort of mask that as long as Poole is coming off the bench and giving you those 3-point looks and still extending the defense along there with Steph Curry, I think they'll be okay. Would it be nice for Klay to step up and not have the 4 for 19, 11-point game? Sure. And quite frankly, he is going to have one of those games, Kevin, where he makes 5 or more 3-point shots here in the NBA Finals. But it's nice to say to them, they win by almost 20 points and Klay really hasn't shown up yet. They'll take that here, hoping that he shows up in at least games 3 or 4 there in Boston.
And honestly, I think they're almost saying, don't even worry about 3 and 4. It's going to sound crazy. I need you in 5 or 6, Klay. Because Jordan Poole tapers off as the series goes on, and that's when they look for Klay to step up there, right? But that's the other thing that we talked about off the top. Steph has to be consistently great for this team, right? Draymond steps up, does what he does, tries to impact the game in all different facets there, gives you, 7, 7, and 7, right? Or almost like the Draymond Green averages and everything that he brings on the defensive side of the basketball. Kevon Looney has to finish. Andrew Wiggins kind of impacting the game on both sides. And then Klay and Poole, they almost start to switch lanes as the series goes on. Poole tapers off, Klay rises to the occasion there. Nevertheless, we are even up through 2. Golden State Warriors, a minus 115 favorite right now to win the NBA championship. We take a quick break, though, here on the early line. When we come back, some big-time headlines in Major League Baseball, a changing of the guard in the AL MVP race, all next right here on SportsGrid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Wow. All right. We're going to get to the major league. There's aspect. Oh, look, I'm away. I keep my pulse on as much as I possibly can. I did not realize how disastrous things had turned for the Los Angeles Angels, and specifically for Mike Trout, who has not had a hit in his last 27 at-bats. Mike Trout, just a week ago, was a 320 hitter. He's now 274. He is batting 232 over the last month and literally has a zero batting average over the last week of baseball. A stunning, stunning fall for a guy who was the model of consistency throughout his Major League Baseball career. We'll talk about the Angels' shortcomings maybe even, you know, throughout all of this, Donnie, but I wanted to start with something that you and I were going back and forth on here, and I'll see if your tune has changed. Mine is not, because the odds are agreeing kind of with what I felt for a while here. Aaron Judge is the AL MVP favorite. He's at plus 230. Trout and Ohtani are still your second and third choices. They're actually co-second choice, both priced at plus 350. The Yankees right now are an unreal 39-15. Best start a third of the way in since the 2001 Seattle Mariners. The Yankees are on a six-game win streak, and it's because Aaron Judge has been otherworldly. 21 home runs, which is baseball's best. 42 RBIs, a 313 batting average, the best OPS in all of Major League Baseball. Donnie, Aaron Judge is the AL MVP favorite. To me, couldn't be more deserving. How do you see it?
Yeah, rightfully so. And you're going to get some of these moving parts here, particularly during the midseason runs, where you say to yourself, okay, which baseball team is playing good in the MVP race? Well, it's the Yankees. Who's their best player and how's he doing? Well, he's doing extremely well, leading the league in home runs. And also one of those contract years we talked about where it's like, oh, man, what's he crazy? They're going to leave $225, $230 million on the table. That might get bumped up by about $50 or $60 million. But at the same time, we were saying to ourselves, okay, Aaron Judge, Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani, 1, 2, 3 in any one of your order. And I was saying, all right, well, if the Angels end up having a really good baseball season, maybe Aaron Judge, you know, gets a little bit of a bump down or a bump up, I should say, because either Mike Trout's probably having a really good season and or Shohei Ohtani. But it's not the case right now, because you're looking at both of those guys, and Ohtani still is having a decent year. But it's not like the year he was having at the plate last year, where it seems like every single day we were talking about, man, can he hit 50? Can he hit 60? Can he set the record? And also pitching well on the mound. And then Mike Trout, I mean, you want to talk about coming home for a homecoming, which you know was a really big weekend for Trout here in Philadelphia. They even had Millville Day, I believe, on Friday night, which is the town that Mike Trout is from, maybe about 30, 35 miles outside of the city of Philadelphia. And he was terrible all weekend. He was actually in position, said, okay, let's see if he has a big weekend in Philadelphia. Maybe he would overtake Shohei Ohtani, but they both have taken a backseat to Aaron Judge. Why? He's playing well, and so are the New York Yankees. And also, to the other point here, you take a look at the Angels and what they're doing. 11 straight losses now, finally under 500. I was saying just a week and a half ago, Kevin, man, Major League Baseball really likes this. Both Los Angeles teams on a collision course to make the playoffs. Mike Trout finally getting back in. Shohei Ohtani, one of the biggest superstars in the world in baseball because of the offshore markets that he certainly brings into the game. But at the same time, I don't understand this. How can you have, and let's just go back to last Thursday, Ohtani number one in MVP odds, Mike Trout number three. Normally you would say to yourself, are they undefeated on the season here? You have two of the top three MVP candidates. This team has to be really good and nobody can touch them. And it's not the case here. It just goes to show you, even though you have really good baseball players, I mean, there's so many players that go into it, whether it's the bullpen, starting pitching, and the other guys on the diamond, where you can have two of the top three players in the game and you're under 500 now. It's wild to think about.
Like, if the season ended today, the Angels aren't a playoff team, as they've now been leapfrogged by the Boston Red Sox, who were left for dead a month ago. And again, just to button this up, though, as far as I will not tell you the race is over, okay? It's just that I don't buy into Trout really and Ohtani. Like, I think if someone catches Judge, obviously it's going to require him to fall back a bit. But I think it's going to come your Jose Ramirez, your Vladdy Juniors, your Rafael Devers. Those are the next three on the board there. Donnie, they rock up to Yankee Stadium. Shohei gets absolutely smashed, right, by the Yankees. Yep. He doesn't do much of anything there. I can't believe he did not go deep. We've been joking a lot on this show about the short porch there. I can't believe Ohtani did not flick one over the short porch in three games at Yankee Stadium there. You know, overall has 12 at-bats to do so. You would anticipate he gets one. As we've said, Trout doesn't have a hit in his last week of baseball. Plus, that which is unimaginable there. So not only has Judge remained piping hot on the best team in Major League Baseball, the Angels are an out-and-out disaster, right? Which is obviously going to play a huge factor. Before we talk about the Phillies who beat up on the Angels, let me ask you this with the Yankees, though, Donnie. 39-15. Baseball's best record right now by a full three games, four games better than the Los Angeles Dodgers. They have the best start since the 2001 Seattle Mariners, which is obviously a team that people know well. Is there a world where the Yankees at some point, not yet, at some point can get to World Series favorites in your eye?
I think there's a good chance of that, but the thing that's always going to hold them down here is now you're seeing the Boston Red Sox playing a little bit better. You always have the Tampa Bay Rays in the mix and also the Toronto Blue Jays. And those are the teams that primarily you're going to be playing and battling with throughout the summer. So I do think that's going to hold. It's wonderful that they got it off to a 39-15 start, but even as you're looking at the Baltimore Orioles, 23-33, still playing decent baseball, I don't know if they can get to that overall favorite because I think most people are just going to say, okay, Dodgers, Dodgers, Dodgers all the way through. And if the Dodgers, I don't know, maybe a Walker Bueller injury or something goes wrong for them, maybe the Yankees, but I don't know how much of this hot start. And again, it's not a start where it's like, hey, Kevin, they're 7-3 in their first 10 games of the season. Like we're at the quarter pole here and they're still playing really good baseball. But I think over the summer months here, when you're going to be going up primarily, as I said, against those teams, Jays, Rays, and the Red Sox, they might get brought down a little bit here, which again, wouldn't hurt them once they get to the playoffs. But just talking about the overall odds of winning the World Series, I think those numbers will come down a little bit for the Yankees.
So you would expect everybody to slow. By the way, I might bring up the 2001 Seattle Mariners. They won 116 games. If the Yankees have baseball's best record, we don't compete for home field anymore in the All-Star game, I think they can move to the World Series favorites. If they meet the Dodgers and the home games are at Yankee Stadium, I think the Yankees should be favored in that series. I think home field advantage is enough there to tick the Yankees as favorites in the series, which means I think they could move to World Series favorites if they have baseball's best record. But to Donnie's point, they're only three games up on the Mets and then four up on the Astros and the Dodgers. There's no guarantee that the Yankees even have the best record in the American League. Again, like we're a third into the season. That's only, 54 games, right? There's a lot of baseball still to be played. Obviously, things going really well for them. The only sour note is the Miguel Andujar trade request. It's interesting. You don't see a lot of trade requests, Donnie, when it comes to baseball. The big point of contention for people is basically that this is now a situation where they're choosing Joey Gallo over Miguel Andujar. Gallo is not giving, Yankee fans or backers much reason to want to keep him around. And the Andujar's a guy people have hopes for there. Ultimately, I don't think the Yankees move on from Andujar until we get to the deadline where they try and bolster the roster here. I understand his frustrations. I don't think this is going to see movement, though, soon.
Yeah, and it's always tough for a Major League Baseball player who thinks he should be at the Major League Baseball level. It's not even like saying, okay, I'm not getting as many starts as I want, but it's always frustrating to be sent down. Just a few short years ago, you thought the Yankees had struck gold with Andujar, one of the best young players in baseball. You go ahead with Gleyber Torres, and you have the future of the Yankees. And now a guy said, hey, I thought I was going to be getting opportunities here. And it's always frustrating when a Major League Baseball player had some success, gets injured, and then not seemingly getting those same opportunities. It's just human nature here. I want to play on this team, but look at the Yankees at 39-15, and you see that, well, you're sending them down because it's a numbers game, as their manager likes to say, and rightfully so it is. It's hard to be like, if we're 15-39, I'm not getting my opportunities here for the Yankees, I want to trade. Just a tough look there when your team is winning, you're supposed to be that team player. You're like, I don't care that we have the best team in baseball, I want out because I'm not getting mine. Doesn't sit that well at this point.
Again, I understand his frustrations. I just don't think a resolution for him specifically is coming that tune. So we've mentioned throughout this, right, the Angels' struggles. And there's so many different ways you can attack this there, right? Dodgers-Mets is a huge, huge series. And we'll get there, I promise, before this hour buttons up. But I do think it's noteworthy that both the Braves and the Phillies are applying a smidge of pressure here to the New York Mets, if at least only just by getting themselves back into the winning column with some level of consistency. You've got the Philadelphia Phillies on a four-game win streak, powered by that offense, averaging 8 runs over those 4 games, and the Braves in a 5-game win streak, averaging better than 7 runs. I don't know if either one of those two teams caught your eye, Donnie, with what they've been able to do. Maybe it's just from a team total perspective there, but did you take any note of the Braves and the Phils heating up big wins, decent win streaks with big offensive performances?
Yeah, maybe a little bit more so from the actual Phillies than the Braves. You're going to go out to Colorado, sometimes you expect to get some of those numbers jumping here. Yeah, but from a Phillies perspective, firing their manager and everything seems to be working well for them since doing that, letting go Joe Girardi. Let's make no bones about this. Because they fired Joe Girardi, it's like, oh, it was Girardi because, you know, he didn't have the film right and he kept telling everybody it was a curveball instead of a slider coming. Hey, Bryce, watch out for the curveball when it was a different... No, that's not the case here. These are professional athletes that should be fired up by making $30 million per year. And getting a lowly Angels team coming into town certainly helped them out. They got that final win against the San Francisco Giants. But I did like what the Phillies actually did, but they still have to overcome that weak bullpen here. The Braves, I figure 28-27 on the season now. We've been waiting on them, right? I know you've been saying this. You know, Braves just haven't gotten together. The Freddie Freeman World Series hangover. Maybe they're just catching their groove right now. Maybe the baseballs and the weather are starting to change. You're saying, okay, guys that we expected to hit now are hitting, but it's still the Mets division to lose at 37-19, still without their three best pitchers. So I saw DeGrom threw 19 pitches in a bullpen session. That didn't have any setbacks. Maybe he's coming back. Max Scherzer playing with his dog and getting bit. I mean, I don't know what's going on up in New York at this point now with some of these guys off the field, but once they get those star caliber pitchers back, it should be fun to watch. But if we're looking for teams that should be in the playoffs, reach the playoff race in the NL East, the Braves, the Mets, and the Phillies, maybe the Phillies and the Braves have finally woken up here. And you're right, just apply some pressure so the Mets just can't go run and hide for the rest of the season here with an easy NL East win.
And I think the reason the Phillies one stands out to me, obviously, look, for the Braves, back above 500 is big. Yes, you get the Coors Field boost, but listen, you'll take that, obviously, if you can. The reason why the Phillies one felt big, look, they're 11 back of the Mets. We'll talk Mets-Dodgers in our next segment as we close up the hour. But it has to come from their offense. Their staff is underrated all in all, right? We know the bullpen issues exist, but this team is looking to win games, Donnie, by scoring 8 runs a night. They're looking and hoping to be one of the very best offenses in all of baseball. They've been good, not great. You know, 5th in the National League, all in all, right? So that overall puts them kind of, you know, it's just you expect big things with Castellanos, Harper, Schwarber, you know, Realmuto, obviously one of the better catchers in all of Major League Baseball when you talk about what he can provide you as a hitter as well. And it's probably not going to apply to the Mets as far back as they are. But as far as that wild card goes, they're 4.5 back of that last as that of that current last wild card. It just shows there's a lot of runway there for the Phillies, even if maybe not enough to get all the way up to the Mets. Because the Mets, they made another statement this weekend. We will talk about their series against the Los Angeles Dodgers after a quick break right here on the Early Line. Kevin Walsh from Donnie Wright's side.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Mets, Dodgers over the weekend. We'll take up the attendance for the Dodgers. First win of the series. There's their only win of this series. Look, Donnie, I'm not going to tell you the Mets need to be favored over the Dodgers as it pertains to the National League, the World Series, this, that, and the third. But if DeGrom and Scherzer both come back, I'm not really sure they shouldn't be favorites in the National League. And obviously that then would pertain to the World Series as a whole. This team is 37-19, best record in the National League. They go to Los Angeles and grab 2 out of 3? I mean, what happens when DeGrom and Scherzer comes back? Look, I'm not trying to put it up against you, but since we've been doing this show together, you've been the Dodger guy. That, listen, just trust them. They'll be fine. I'm not saying anything's wrong with them. I'm just saying the Mets keep making statement after statement after statement. They split a series in L.A. That's impressive to me, taking the last two.
No, it really is impressive. And also, if you take a look here at the Mets, 8-2 in their last 10 games. The reason why I bring that up is you're not supposed to go 8-2 in any stretch without your top three pitchers. You're supposed to hang on for dear life. You're supposed to be like, man, if we could take a game out of this next three-game series from anybody, we'll take that at this point. And they're doing everything and exceeding expectations, because I think we're all waiting. What happens if McGill does come back and he's the pitcher that we saw in April? What happens if Scherzer does come back and say, well, hey, I ran out of gas late last year because I'm getting older with a lot of innings on my arm. Boy, I got rested. I had 2 month break basically during the season. And the same thing with Jacob DeGrom. It's always about the end of the season and where your starting pitching is going to be and how many innings that you've lined up over the summer. And you see the New York Mets may be one of the best teams in baseball without, it doesn't even compute. That's why it's so hard for me to talk about. Usually when you lose your ace of your state, well, we don't know how we're going to do this, and we got to slide guys in and out, bring guys up from our AAA farm system. That's not the case with the Mets. They're not missing a beat with arguably the two best pitchers in baseball coming in for the Cy Young. It was DeGrom, Scherzer. Why are you taking anybody else? Because one of those two guys is going to win it here, and they're a non-factor in the season, and yet the Mets sit here 8.5 game lead in the NL East. Amazing.
It's just, I love the way you put it. It's not just their two best pitchers. They might be the two best in all of baseball, and they don't have them right now. Stanley Cup playoff odds are next.
We never stop.